Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chasingEarhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July the 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 81 years later, all over the world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 of the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
On July 2nd, 1937, a small crowd gathered to watch record-setting female flyer Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan take off from the South Pacific island nation of New Guinea. In the previous weeks, they had been hopscotching across the globe in their state-of-the-art Lockheed Electra. If successful, they would become the first people ever to fly around the world near its widest point, the equator. Their target that day was Howland Island, a sandy speck in the vast Pacific, more than 2,000 miles away. As the Electra rose from the runway, the onlookers had no idea that they would be the last people to see the two adventurers alive.
Tonight, you'll hear from an author that takes a different approach to her writing and her thoughts on Amelia Earhart's relevance. Project guest Patricia Lakin has written multiple children's books, including the well-received and long-lasting Amelia Earhart, More Than a Flyer. Tonight, we continue our children's series on the landmark 70th episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, as Patty joins us via Zoom from her home in New York to discuss Amelia Earhart's childhood and how it shaped her destiny to become More Than a Flyer. I am beyond thrilled to continue our children's series on Amelia Earhart tonight with a guest that is more than qualified to speak on the subject. She's an educator and an author of dozens of books, and tonight we are honored to have her with us to talk about Amelia Earhart, More Than a Flyer, part of the Ready to Read series. From beautiful New York City via Zoom, Patty Lakin, welcome to Chasing Earhart.
Oh, my pleasure. Lovely to be included. Thank you.
Now, Patty, let's kick this off tonight with some housekeeping. Can you tell our listeners a little about your education and your professional background, please?
Sure. I grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, and I was an elementary school teacher for a number of years. And when our sons were born, my husband encouraged me to take a class. And I happened to find this class called Writing for Children, which was taught at the New School. I now live in New York City, and I've lived in New York for many, many years. So I took this class, Writing for Children, and I found that I was hooked, and that's really how I started writing. And that was 39 years ago, and I've been writing ever since.
Of course, everyone that knows our show knows what's coming next. What are your earliest recollections or impressions of Amelia Earhart?
Oh, that's a good question. I think somebody who kind of looked like Katharine Hepburn, she disappeared before I was born. So I think just seeing pictures of her, Katharine Hepburn, who was somebody I always admired and was a no-nonsense woman. So I kind of put her in that league.
Was the Ready to Read series the first time Amelia came into your professional life?
That's right, exactly. So that I certainly knew who she was, but I really knew very little about her. And then what I do is when I write a biography, and even though it's quite honestly harder when you have to write a 32 or 48 page book, you really have to, well, of course, I have to be very well versed in the subject matter. So I read anything I could on Amelia Earhart, because then what I want to do is take what I feel is the essence of her life. And when I write a biography, for me, it's what makes that person tick? What drives them? That's what I sought out when I wrote the biography.
I always like to ask this question of all of my children's authors, but is it different or more difficult even to write a children's book and tackle it from that point of view as opposed to, say, writing a straight-up biography because of the audience you're writing for?
I think any good writing is hard because I think that, you know, you have people who write for adults who write biographies. They make the character come to life, and that's, I think, a real skill or talent. So hopefully, I think it's hard no matter whether you're writing 200 pages or whether you're writing 32. The only reason I mentioned 32 is it doesn't mean just because I'm writing 32 pages that I can read one book or one article and feel that I quote unquote know Amelia Earhart. I have to read voluminous amounts of things to really try to get a sense of what was going on at the time, what were her parents like, what was her childhood like, all of that.
Since you're writing for children here, is it important to you to lean heavily on Amelia's childhood and include a lot of that in your story?
Yes, because to me, I think that that really is what framed it for her. I think, you know, I've done quite a few biographies, and I'll make a comparison. I did a biography of Clara Barton. I mention this because Amelia Earhart grew up in a time when women were expected to marry and have children. That was their option. But she came from a family where her mother and father encouraged her to do what she liked for her and for her sister. And I think that that's incredibly liberating. I think that that's what gave her the freedom to want to do what she did. And what I was fascinated with was she had visions. There was a poem that I have in the beginning of my book that I found because I read her sister's biography of her about wanting to fly. And this, of course, were before planes were invented. Now, the reason I mentioned Clara Barton is that she came from a family where she was not particularly good looking, and her mother, I think, had severe mental illness, but also was distraught that her daughter would not get married and didn't really give her any kind of emotional support. So when I do these biographies, I find it interesting, where does the young person get the emotional support? If they get it, they usually can soar. If they don't, they have to find it in other places. And sometimes certain personality quirks reveal themselves because of it. So that's the one big takeaway I have about Amelia Earhart.
You make an interesting point, and I think that since Amelia's mom was such an adventurer herself, being the first woman to climb Pike's Peak, that certainly set the tone and the example for Amelia to want to sort of aspire to be like her mother in that effect, or even to try to go beyond it.
Right. And one of the things that I came across, and I said, oh, I have to put this in the book. She was given, of course, as you probably know, her father was an alcoholic, and they spent a great deal of time living with her grandparents. And for one Christmas, she got a boy's sled. And when I read that, I scratched my head because I grew up in Massachusetts, snow. I love sledding. I live in New York. Our kids love sledding. We've been sledding for a long time. And I never heard of a girl sled versus a boy sled. And then there was the story where she was on this sled as opposed to the little chair affixed to a flat wooden flyer. And because there was this milk truck going by with the horse who had the blinders, and it was a very icy hill, and she made this instantaneous decision. And I thought, okay, she's got the guts, but she also can think very quickly on her feet or on her belly, as in the case of the sledding. And that sort of laid the groundwork for me to say, okay, she could do this.
Now, this is a really speculative question, but decisions like that and adventures like that that she experienced while she was a little girl sort of builds a foundation for the person you're going to become. She really was a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants kind of girl. She always was. But do you think that those experiences that she had in Atchison when she was little were ever called back on as she got older and became a pilot?
Oh, that I wouldn't know, because the book that I read that I felt was the most definitive was by her sister, and I don't recall it being terribly emotionally insightful. It was more recalling events and things. She may have, who knows?
Let me ask you about the art in the book, because it's really very well done. When you're writing books like this for children, how important is the art to what you want to convey as a story?
100%, which is, now I don't select the artist. That's the job of the editor. So obviously I'm not aware of it. I try to write scenes that I think really capture the essence of the person. And hopefully those actions are things that an artist can easily pick up and draw. It's one of the things, I mean, when you're writing fiction, writing about a boy and a dad in a car trip, you better make sure that they're observing things on the outside, because, you know, every page turn should not be the boy and the dad in the car, because there's no action. So I tend to be a visual person anyway, but I do not write for the artist. I write to put into words what I feel is the essence that I come away with about that person, so that I hope that people who read any of my books will have a better understanding of what made that person tick. And hopefully they've done things in their lives. It can be small, simple things, but that are illustratable.
What's interesting about our listener base is that we tend to have a lot of aspiring authors that are listeners to the show. So we have these folks that want to end up doing what you do. I wonder what advice you would give to the people that want to write, and want to write for children especially.
Write what you care about is the most important thing. Because if you are passionate about something, your passion will come through in the words, and it will engage other readers, and it will make them think or have a deeper appreciation of something that they never knew about or thought about. And that's true for fiction as well as nonfiction. And sometimes, you know, for fiction, one needs to do research as well. I could be writing about my own childhood. I'm certainly an expert on my own childhood, but I may want to write about a certain candy store. So I may, I remember it was on the corner of the block. And so you may need to do a bit of research just to refresh your memory if specifics does count. If not, it doesn't really matter. But the research, I think, for fiction is that there always has to be emotional truth in your story. And sometimes I've written about things about our own children, with their permission, of course. And in some instances, the way something really happened, really the story that I wanted to write with whatever I wanted to convey, I had to veer from the facts because it was taking my story in a different direction. But the emotional truth always has to be consistent, I feel.
You know, it's funny, we had Brad Meltzer on the show a while back, and he told me a story that I'd like to get your take on. He told me about the time he first told his daughter about Amelia Earhart, and he said, you know, Amelia Earhart flew across the Atlantic Ocean. And his daughter's reply was, well, big deal, Dad, everyone flies across the Atlantic Ocean. But when he took a different approach to relation, he told her the roller coaster story that you just talked about. And when she heard that, there was this instant connection, and she said, wow, she sounds like fun. Do you think it's important to relate basic human experiences to children, things they might have done as kids, so that figures like Amelia Earhart aren't, as Brad puts it, just another black and white picture in a history book?
Yes, not only make it fun, but I think also to certainly empower women today, because we have a lot more things to accomplish as women. I think that, yes, we're hardly heads of many CEOs. We've still never had a female president. We have only a handful of people of females who are in government. And what I found fascinating was that Amelia was allowed with her cousins and so forth to play basketball, the newly invented game. And one of the things that I said to my editor, I wanted to have at the start of every chapter of my book what was happening historically, just to put it in retrospect. And when I speak at schools, I say, okay, how many boys here are on a sports team? And then I say, how many girls are on a sports team? A lot of girls raise their hands. I said, okay, we're going to go back in time when Amelia was your age, whether it was third grade, whatever. Girls, how many girls on a sports team? Put your hands down. You were not allowed. What? Yes. So I think our kids are grown, so I'm not reading to little kids at the moment, but when I do school talks, I think it's important for them to see they were not allowed. There were no school female sports teams. And a lot of them couldn't even, weren't even necessarily sent to school because that wasn't important to educate the girls. So I think the children that I am meeting, I think it's important for them to see how far they have come. They are sitting around, they can wear pants, of thank goodness, they can play in sports teams, and they can be the doctors, not just the nurses. They can be the presidents, not the secretaries. So that's how I bring in historical figures to the young people of today.
The book came out in 2003, so it's been a long time. What has been the response for you when you visit schools and classrooms? Do children still take inspiration from Amelia Earhart?
Yes, definitely. Because, first of all, I think it combines a lot of things. There's the glamour of the flight, the adventurousness, but also the fact that she was empowered. She felt empowered, and she was doing something that was considered, and even probably still today, a masculine profession. My husband and I just took a flight recently, and there was a female voice saying, "I am your captain." And it wasn't, "Oh, sure, fine." So let's just take a look today. How many captains of major airlines have females? I don't think too many.
So 81 years now since Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan vanished over the Pacific Ocean, yet so many people are still so remarkably invested in their fate and ending to this story. My question for you is, why?
Well, one of the things that I read, you may not like this answer, was, first of all, I mean, there were Black women who were aviators. And do we know their names? No, sadly, we don't. She was selected because there was something very attractive about her. Had she been Clara Barton, maybe not considered to be good looking, I don't know that there would have been somehow all of the brouhaha. So it's a mixed bag. Now, she didn't bring that on herself, but that was what society was imposing at the moment. And she benefited from it. I mean, I truly believe this was a woman who really was an adventurer who wanted to break barriers in many, many ways. So I applaud her completely. However, had she been Mexican American or Black American, would she have had some of the same notoriety? I don't know. And again, as I say, and it was interesting because when you asked me, and my initial reaction was Audrey Hepburn, who at the time was, you know, certainly a Hollywood star, not the typical beauty, but definitely somebody who was considered a rather attractive woman, etc. So I think she, in terms of her notoriety, it was well deserved, but you also have to recognize that there were certain things that American society was looking for, and she fit the bill.
An interesting observation that many of our guests would agree with. Now, Patty, where can everyone find your work online and find out more about the books that you've written?
PatriciaLakin.com, www.PatriciaLakin.com.
Patty, this has been an enlightening conversation tonight. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you. And I appreciate your work and your podcast and your efforts. So bravo to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarris Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.